Today on Uncommon Stories, we will stop by a drugstore, pick up a few items we've run out of at home, and as we are paying for them, we'll snag a candy bar conveniently placed at the checkout line. On the way home, we'll unwrap our morsel of sugar goodness and enjoy the sweet taste of chocolate that always seems to comfort us. We'll also grab some chocolate chip cookies after dinner and show our kids how dunking them in milk is always the best way to eat them. Or maybe our kids are grown and we just love doing that ourselves. Either way, get your sweet tooth and taste buds ready for a delicious journey into the creation of chocolate and chocolate chip cookies. People eat chocolate in one form or another on a regular basis, and of course, kids eat the most. It's the perfect treat to put in kids' lunches for school and for adults and kids alike to munch on after dinner as we settle in for a little relaxed time before bed. But you might be surprised to learn that chocolate alone is a $4 billion a year industry in the United States. I should have bought some stock in Hershey's or Reese's back when I was a kid instead of just eating all their candy bars. I wonder what that figure would be worldwide. Well, it's obvious people eat a lot of chocolate. But do you know how much chocolate the average American consumes in a year? Think about it, and we'll find out if you're right at the end of our story. As we are used to all types of candy bars and chocolate treats, especially during the holidays, chocolate didn't start out the way you might think. And the first chocolate started out a lot longer than you might realize. The first use of chocolate was to create a chocolate drink, and this dates back thousands of years. In fact, chocolate that is eaten wasn't created until less than 200 years ago, in the 1800s. But more on that later. Chocolate, as you probably know, comes from the cocoa bean. And there is evidence that leads to early northern Central American cultures using cocoa to make beverages as far back as 1900 BC in Chiapas, Mexico, and 1700 BC in Veracruz, Mexico. But the first major civilization known to use cocoa beans to make chocolate drinks dates back to 1400 BC in the Olmeca civilization. Residue of cocoa was recently found in pottery excavated by anthropologists from the University of Pennsylvania in Honduras. And it is believed that the pulp from the cocoa fruit was fermented into a chocolate alcoholic beverage during this period. It's also believed that the Olmecans used this beverage during ceremonies, but there are no records to prove this. The Mayans most likely took the Olmecans' use of the cocoa bean and created their own cocoa or chocolate beverage. And the Mayans not only loved to drink their chocolate, they revered chocolate as given to them by the gods. They believed that it was the food of the rain deity, Khan. They further believed that the gods shed their blood on the cocoa pods to help them grow. Thus, the Mayans would gather once a year to give thanks to the god Ecchua, who they saw as the cocoa god. Also, the chocolate drink was not just for the wealthy. All Mayan citizens were allowed to drink it, and it was consumed at just about every meal. Typically, they would mix the thick chocolate with water, chili peppers, cornmeal, and honey, transferring the drink from pot to pot with each ingredient until the top of the drink had a rich foam. The Mayans used chocolate in official ceremonies as well as religious rituals. It was common among all classes of the Mayans to drink chocolate drinks during feasts, festivals, and marriage ceremonies, and it was also used at funerals as an offering and tribute to the family and the deceased. As their value grew in the Mayan nation, cocoa beans began to be used as currency. At one point, they were worth more than gold. And during marriage ceremonies, cocoa beans were exchanged by the bride and the groom to represent the value of each one to the other. Also, the Mayans took great care in preparing cocoa beans for their chocolate drink, cutting open the pods, exposing the beans and the pulp, letting them sit out for a few days to ferment. Sometimes they would roast the beans to give them a smoky flavor. Once fermented or roasted, the husks were removed and the beans were ground into a paste. Once the sweeteners and spices were added, the drink would be served in a short vessel so the chocolate drink would have a full froth to it. This was very important to the Mayans. Needless to say, the Mayans held the cocoa bean and their chocolate drink in high regard. And as their nation grew, so did their fondness and use of the cocoa bean. And it stayed this way throughout the Mayans' imperial years. As the Mayan nation declined, the Aztec civilization grew and began to take over much of the region north of the Mayan territory. The Aztec nation was more organized than the Mayan nation, creating city-states within their region and creating government and political rule to create more wealth and efficiency within city-states for economic and cultural growth. But one of the things the Aztecs borrowed from the Mayans to add to their culture was cocoa beans. Although they couldn't grow cocoa plants in their region, they imported them. But soon, the Aztecs conquered areas in Central America that could grow cocoa plants, and the Aztecs ordered civilizations to pay them a tax or a tribute of cocoa beans from their harvests. Thus, cocoa beans were available to all city-states in the Aztec nation. And as the Mayans, the Aztecs used the cocoa beans not only for a chocolate drink, but as currency as well. One could purchase a canoe filled with fresh water or a turkey hen for a cool 100 cocoa beans. Not a bad deal. Also like the Mayans, the Aztecs had a god of the cocoa plant, Quetzalcoatl, whom they believed had been condemned by other gods for sharing chocolate with humans. Not known for sure, but I'm guessing since this god was condemned, they didn't celebrate him as the Mayans celebrated their cocoa plant god. Although the Aztecs used the cocoa bean in many similar ways as the Mayans, one way they were different is how they drank their chocolate. As the Mayans drank a warm or room temperature chocolate drink, the Aztecs drank their chocolate cold. Also, they added ingredients as to consume their chocolate as an aphrodisiac, and they were the first civilization to include chocolate in the rations for soldiers. This has an impact on future civilizations, and we'll get to that in a minute. When the Aztec nation was defeated by the Spanish conquistadors, the cocoa bean and the plant were introduced to Europe. Christopher Columbus himself came upon cocoa beans during his fourth mission to the Americas in 1502. He brought them back to Spain with him, but the beans did not make an impact in the country until the Spanish friars created chocolate and introduced it to the Spanish court. Conquistador Hernan Cortes, the Spanish military leader who led the onslaught and eventual fall of the Aztec nation, was probably the first European to see and most likely taste chocolate when he observed it in the court of Montezuma in 1519. Not long after, chocolate was imported to Europe, and at first was used primarily as a medicine. The chocolate was bitter and helped soothe stomach aches and abdominal pain, but the Spanish eventually added sweeteners to chocolate and brought on an entirely new use for chocolate. When first introduced to Spain, chocolate was made similar to how the Aztecs made it, but citizens in Spain began to add honey and sugar, and the drink became an enjoyable, tasty treat during the 18th century. Chocolate was still a drink, but its allure spread throughout Europe quickly. Growing tired of the cost and time it took to import cocoa beans, European countries began to figure out how to grow the plants themselves, and cocoa farms sprang up in England, the Netherlands, and France. Even though they had their own farms, processing cocoa beans was slow and took many workers. And as necessity is the mother of invention, soon a mechanical way to produce the beans was on its way. In 1729, Walter Churman of Bristol, UK, petitioned King George II for an invention for the expedition, fine and clean making of chocolate by an engine. The patent was granted, and soon cocoa beans could be processed on a far larger scale. The patent was purchased by Joseph Fry in 1761. With his partner John Vaughan, they created the Fry and Vaughan Chocolate Company, and for years they were the leading maker of chocolate in England and much of Europe. The company leadership changed hands through the years, but stayed in the Fry family. And finally, in 1847, Joseph Fry, son of Joseph Storrs Fry and grandson of the original owner of the company, Joseph Fry, developed the first solid bar of chocolate. After centuries of chocolate drinks made from the cocoa bean, we have reached the first chocolate bar. and the fries weren't finished. They were just getting started. In 1853, the chocolate company created the cream stick, a center consisting of icing used to decorate cakes coated with chocolate. And this was the first industrialized and affordable chocolate bar. With a few years of experimenting, remolding the shape of the cream stick, and adding new flavors such as peppermint cream, orange cream, raspberry cream, and strawberry cream, and with the advent of steam engines replacing wind and horse-drawn power, the fries created the chocolate cream bar in 1866, the first mass-produced chocolate bar, and it's the world's oldest chocolate bar brand. The world of chocolate would never be the same. In 1875, Daniel Peter, a Swiss chocolate maker, invented milk chocolate by adding powdered milk. Interestingly enough, he bought his powdered milk from his neighbor, Henry Nestle, the founder of the world's largest food and beverage company. Not long after, in 1879, Rudolf Lindt, founder of the famous Lindt Chocolate Company, invented the conching machine, which created a smoother and richer flavored chocolate. With these new added inventions, chocolate made its way across the globe, and chocolate makers, inventors, and companies sprang up everywhere. In the U.S. alone, Milton S. Hershey, H.B. Reese, and Otto Schnering of Baby Ruth candy bar fame began chocolate companies that have grown into billion-dollar industries. In the early 1900s is when chocolate became big business, and competition became fierce between chocolate companies, and this progressed into the 1920s. But when the Depression hit, chocolate took a big hit, much like everything else. Some companies shut down until the economy came back. And one of the things that helped chocolate get back on its feet was feeding the troops in World War II. Similar to the Aztecs way back when, chocolate became part of the rations for soldiers in the field. Even though dark chocolate was pretty much what non-military people could buy, soldiers were given the chocolate they ate growing up before the war. Lifting their spirits and a nice treat after a meal, the chocolate industry gave the troops a taste of home and slowly moved the business back to the good old days. When the war was over, soldiers looked for their favorite candy in stores, and the chocolate craze was back on. Chocolate has come a long way since the people of the Olmeca civilization ground up some cocoa beans and created a bitter chocolate alcoholic beverage centuries ago. Well, I know you're craving for some chocolate right about now. So go grab a candy bar as we move on and learn about another treat that chocolate is used to create, the delicious chocolate chip cookie. Cookies have been made for some time, but they were mostly a simple snack to go with tea. Usually small, light, and made with few ingredients. That changed when in the late 1930s, Ruth Wakefield, who ran the Toll House restaurant with her husband in Whitman, Massachusetts, decided to try something different with the cookies she served with tea. You see, Wakefield was known for her baking and for delicious desserts she served at the restaurant. And she felt it was time to, shall we say, kick it up a notch. Instead of making her normal sugar and cinnamon cookies one day, she grabbed some chocolate and chopped it up into small pieces. Thinking the chocolate would melt and mix with the cookie dough, she put them in the oven and waited for her new chocolate cookies to be done. To her surprise, the chocolate didn't melt, but stayed in little chunks in the dough. And thus, the chocolate crunch cookie was born. Wakefield continued to tweak the recipe and found the style of cookie she liked with the morsels of chocolate in the cookie dough. They were still small, like her other cookies, and she still served them with tea, but the feedback and compliments she received for the cookies was very impressive. So much so that Marjorie Husted, better known as Betty Crocker, featured the chocolate crunch cookie on her radio program. That led to Wakefield giving the rights to her recipe and the Toll House name to Nestle on March 20th, 1939. And when I say give, I'm not kidding. The only compensation Wakefield received was chocolate for life. If only she could have seen that Nestle would create Nestle Toll House chocolate chip cookies and Nestle Toll House semi-sweet morsels so people could make their own cookies. The Wakefields could have had a chain of restaurants, or even retired. Wakefield's Cookies, and eventually Nestle's Cookies, were a perfect pick-me-up for the Great Depression and the U.S. entering World War II. Not that a cookie can take the pains away from difficult times, but a little comfort during tough times is always helpful. And much like chocolate, as discussed before, chocolate chip cookies were added to care packages shipped to soldiers overseas. And when the war was over, chocolate chip cookies were sought after by returning soldiers and the families they were raising. And like many post-war products, chocolate chip cookies were going from homemade to mass-produced. By the 1950s, Nestle and Pillsbury began selling refrigerated chocolate chip cookie dough, and Nabisco launched Chips Ahoy in 1963. The baby boom generation who grew up on the Toll House cookie looked to bring the chocolate chip cookie craze to their families. And more chocolate chip cookie brands popped up. Famous Amos, Mrs. Field, and David's Cookies started operations in the 70s, and some still make their cookies today. One of the more interesting stories behind the creation of a chocolate chip cookie brand is the story of Wally Amos, of Famous Amos. Amos was a talent agent at William Morris and signed such artists as Simon and Garfunkel, and he represented such acts as The Supremes and Dionne Warwick. But Amos decided to go into the cookie business after a high-profile client, Hugh Masekela, who is known as the father of South African jazz, fired him as his agent, and another client fractured his leg just before shooting a promising movie that would have launched his career. With funding from friends, including Marvin Gaye, Amos created his chocolate chip cookie in a tiny farmhouse kitchen in Lowell, Massachusetts. As a marketing ploy, he donned a Panama hat and embroidered shirt to pitch his brand of cookie. And Amos became famous. And even though he sold the company, Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies are still a big seller. Chocolate chip cookies kept reinventing itself the next couple decades, from cereal to ice cream cookies to chocolate frosting and chocolate chip cookie cups, even chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream. And there doesn't seem to be an end in sight for the popularity and the love for chocolate chip cookies. So maybe tonight after dinner, you and the kids dunk a few chocolate chip cookies into some milk for a comforting dessert. You might even warm them up a little. That always makes them taste great. Well, have you thought about our question? How much chocolate does your average American eat in a year? Between regular chocolate bars, specialty candy bars, small assorted chocolates, and chocolate in cakes and pastries, the average American will eat 6 pounds of chocolate a year. That's half a pound a month. Make sure you get plenty of exercise. All that chocolate could put on a few pounds if you're not careful. Well, there we have it. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of Uncommon Stories, and come back next time to listen to more interesting, surprising, thought-provoking, and entertaining stories that are true, but probably are just uncommon. I'm Brad Greer for Uncommon Stories, wishing everyone a wonderful week, and thanks for listening.